Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm joined today by Mr. Marius Root. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer. Let's get into the news stories of today. The first one we're going to talk about is the wonderful things that happen in South Africa on the campaign trail. And that is, you see the EFF branching out from its normal places, its normal stomping grounds, its normal rhetoric to go and try and win votes in new constituencies. In this case, the EFF went to the mostly colored community in El Dorado Park in an attempt to win over new voters to the EFF's cause. While speaking at a town hall meeting in El Dorado Park yesterday, Julius Malema said that under an EFF government, colored South Africans would also benefit from EFF policy, saying that how South Africa looks like is how a place of employment must look like. For as long as this place of employment has no coloreds, it's not a true reflection of South Africa. It's a distortion of South Africa. He had a bit of a mixed reception. Some people seem to kind of take to his message. Others were much more skeptical. But it is interesting to show, I think, that the EFF is branching out in a new direction to kind of expand its support base beyond its traditional support. And there's sort of two ways to read this. One way is that they feel very comfortable with their core supporters, that they're going to back them no matter what. So they feel like they can expand to new voters. The alternative way to look at this is that they're having a difficult time expanding their vote share amongst the people who they normally get support from. And so they're trying to branch out in an attempt to make up for their lack of success in other areas. There's a lot to be said here. I think one of them is that in this sort of endorsement of incredibly strict BEE that or affirmative action that Malema endorses and the EFF endorses, what he said here is the much softer version of what he said in other places. So in this case, Malema says, you know, there must be more colored people employed into positions across South Africa. But Malema has also said things like Zulu people mustn't have jobs in Limpopo beyond their portion of the population, and Pedis mustn't have jobs in KZN. So one kind of wonders what an EFF government would look like. Perhaps it would be a little bit closer to what Jimmy Manye once infamously said when he basically said that colored people can't be over-concentrated in the Western Cape. What do you think of Malema's remarks here?
Yeah, I think the point about when he said Zulu shouldn't be working in Limpopo and Pedi shouldn't be working in KwaZulu-Natal, it's a classic example of Julius Malema and the EFF's doublethink. They tell us they want a united Africa with open borders, and if you're Nigerian, you know, as South African, South African and Kenyan should be able to work in Congo or whatever the case is, and anybody should be able to come to South Africa. But then at the same time, he says that a Pedi shouldn't be allowed to work outside Limpopo, and a Zulu shouldn't be allowed to work outside KwaZulu-Natal. So if you just think about it for 2 seconds, this whole kind of argument breaks down pretty quickly. But I think also with Julius Malema campaigning there in El Dorado Park, which I say is generally broadly a colored community, I think Julius Malema and the EFF are a little bit under pressure. I think the MK party is eating its lunch a bit. And if you look at recent polls from the Social Research Foundation, of course, it's a poll, so take it with the obligatory bit of salt and all the usual caveats. The EFF, they seem to be a bit on the back foot. They're only polling at about 5 or 6%, which is what they got in the 2014 election. And I think if the party doesn't get more than did in 2019, which is about 10%, that's going to be actually a very bad election for them. And I think the party's Julius Malema is probably, I think he's quite concerned. KwaZulu-Natal was quite a big growth area for them between 2014 and 2019. They also did pretty well in KwaZulu-Natal in 2021. But I think the MK party is really hoovering up quite a lot of people who would have thought of voting for Julius Malema in Natal. So I think, they're under a bit of pressure. Yeah? And I think that is why he's saying what he's saying. But as a usual nonsense coming from Julius Malema, he was also at this same event at El Dorado Park. He was saying the reason the economy is not growing is because white people are only keeping their money in the banks and not investing, and all these kind of, you know, very silly racial tropes. And, you know, how we know that's not how an economy works. And also, that all said, I'm pretty sure Julius Malema knows that's not how the economy works. And I don't think he thinks that white people have as a whole have all this loads of money in the bank, but he just says this kind of thing to get onto front pages and to, you know, I think he says what he thinks people want to hear. So also we've seen, I mean, he's flip-flopped. We don't have to talk about how much he flip-flops, and as I say, he's double think. I mean, he hated Jacob Zuma until about 10 minutes ago. Now suddenly he's mates with him again. So just shows you.
Yeah, I see the EFF, despite the competition they may be getting from MK and KZN, have already expressed their desire to work in coalitions with the MK party. So that may also be quite interesting as how it plays into the politics of KZN. Okay, let us move on to our next story, and this is about the Western Cape. A study recently conducted by Labour Market Intelligence shows that the Western Cape has been a pretty big generator of employment, and that it is the one place in the country where, on average, there is a much higher demand for labor and more job creation. So this is from the Department of Higher Education and Training's, this is part of their program to kind of identify problems in the labor sector. But I think what is quite interesting about this is essentially an independent study that's confirming that the Western Cape has actually, on some key economic fronts, performing much better than other places in the country, which I think the DA will be very happy to tout loudly. It also suggests that South Africa's employment situation would be even worse over the last couple of years if you remove the Western Cape. So South Africa's unemployment rate has been pretty flat since the end of the COVID-19 shutdowns, when we had this big rise in unemployment, and then we had a sort of stabilizing, a little bit of a stabilization, but it didn't go back up to the same level it was at. And every quarter now, the unemployment rate either goes up very slightly or goes down very slightly, but it's very close to the place it was a couple of years ago. If you took the Western Cape out of that equation, the rest of South Africa, I think, would have pretty continuously had an increase in its unemployment rate. Maurice, what do you make of this?
Yeah, I think it shows you how important policy is. Of course, the Western Cape, you know, a lot of people like to say it does better because of history of South Africa. For example, the Western Cape, I think, is the only province that doesn't have any former homelands within its borders, which is all true. But we must also remember that's now 30 years ago. That's a generation ago. And policies are, you know, a lot of failures of South Africa. You can't blame on things like apartheid and the old homeland policy and so on. You know, we have to start realizing a lot of the reason that we have things such as very high unemployment is because of policy failures within the ANC government. And this article shows Western Cape GDP has been growing quicker than the rest of South Africa as a whole. Employment's been growing quicker there. So obviously it's doing something right. And yeah, it's unemployment is, it's actually, I mean, it's the biggest tragedy in post-apartheid South Africa, I think. And as I've said before, behind each of these numbers, the whatever the number is, I think it's 10 million, whatever it is, unemployed people, there's an actual person behind those numbers. You know, it's somebody who can't provide for them of their family. It's somebody who's got to deal with the indignity of being unemployed, of having to ask other people for help. You know, there's a real person behind each of those numbers. And I think that's the biggest tragedy, the distraction of just human potential and human capital from such these very high unemployment numbers. And it's an absolute tragedy. And that's if the government was serious about helping anybody, would any policy would have to, the first question would be, how is this going to create jobs? That'd be the only thing you think about. But we know policies we do actually have in South Africa are the retard the creation of jobs or actually actively destroy it. So you know, policies such as BE and our various labor regulations, they're all, you know, pretty bad for job creation. And yeah, it's, as I said, it's that is actually the biggest tragedy of post-apartheid South Africa.
No, exactly right. Just shows what can actually be done even with relatively limited policy reform, that if any government embraces those reforms in some ways, if they get some of the basics of governance right, you don't even have to get them all right. You don't have to fix all the problems. You can start moving in the right direction. I think that's a very important lesson for South Africa, when many of our problems seem almost unsolvable. And lastly, we're going to talk today about Springbok captain Siya Kolisi, who has managed to make the Times list of 100 most influential people in 2023. He had his entry in the magazine's list written up by a South African comedian, Trevor Noah, who, of course, works in the US nowadays. And I think, Morris, in our pre-show discussion, we kind of highlighted how Khaleesi and the Springboks in general have been a real area of excellence in the national story. Rugby has been developed on a much deeper level than many other sports in the country. And people like Khaleesi are kind of the product of, not only is he naturally a kind of talented guy, not only is he a hardworking guy, not only is he a nice role model for so many South Africans, but he also has benefited from some important initiatives put in place that have helped him to have a successful sports career. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think it's having Khaleesi in this list, it shows the kind of influential the Springbok brand is. Obviously, I mean, this isn't a list of actually the 100 most influential people on the planet. You know, that's not how these lists actually work. But I think just show how popular the Springboks are, even globally speaking, and someone like Siya Khaleesi. And I mean, there's a current documentary, Chasing the Sun 2, about the Springboks winning last year's World Cup. And there's the clip of Rassie Erasmus saying, "We're the only thing that effing works in this country." And I think that's exactly it. But I think that's also actually, it's a bit of a cliche, but the Springboks does show how South Africa could work. You know, the Springboks didn't win the World Cup, the last two World Cups, by divine intervention or through luck, whatever. It came through proper planning, through preparation, and they are an example of true transformation. They didn't just replace white people with black people. They went and made created opportunities for people who'd been excluded in the past, and we've seen what's happened. We've come people are like have come through like Siya Khaleesi and Cheslin Kolbe and Kurtley Arendse, Makazole Mapimpi, people who would have been excluded in the past, especially a guy like Mapimpi. He comes from quite a poor background in the Eastern Cape, I think, and 30, 40 years ago, he would not be the sports superstar he is today. And it isn't just because apartheid ended. There were also, the Springboks put in various talent spotting mechanisms, around the country, made sure that rugby academies were working and scholarships, exactly. But I mean, even a guy like Mapimpi, he went to quite a poor school. It came through the talent spotting initiatives that SA Rugby had, which also the Rassie Erasmus and Jacques Nienaber had actually played a role in implementing these kinds of things. So yeah, the Springboks are just an example of, they show that South Africans can be excellent, but these things don't just happen because of Madiba magic or because God was feeling sorry for us or whatever the case might be. They're from proper plans put in place and hard work, and that's how you get there. And I think Siya Khaleesi is he's definitely a good role model for, it's a bit naff, but for the new South Africa, if you want to call it that, or the Rainbow Nation or whatever, and something to, I think to be quite proud of. And it's quite nice to see Siya Khaleesi there. And it's pretty somebody like Trevor Noah to write him up, but yeah, what can you do?
Trevor Noah is a South Africa, successful South African, whether one likes him or not. he has actually one of the biggest platforms, I think, of any South African on the world stage at the moment. But anyway, we hope you found this show interesting. We will be back tomorrow, of course, on the Daily Friend Wrap. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.